Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios are getting a nice little wipe down thanks to D-Mace.
Yes,
D-Mace giving me once over.
Studio custodian.
Yeah, you know, with emptying trash, cleaning off tables, you know. The more I can do, you know. I try to be a helping hand to the people in the studio.
Man, you leave the studio for 48 hours, you go do a show at Bridgestone, you come back, and what the heck?
The whole place just goes by the wayside.
Exactly, man. Shoot.
We are going on
another day in paradise.
This group is tasked at keeping it all together.
We try to.
We try.
Yeah, we absolutely try.
The next thing we got to do is hold a garage sale for all this stuff over here in the corner that gets out. What did you say? It's like Sanford and Son?
Yeah, it's just like Sanford
and Son.
It's
like Lamont Sanford and Fred Sanford holding a little yard sale out here. Holy cow.
In the first Toy Story movie, you know Sid the bully? Whose backyard is just like a toy wasteland, Barbie head on like a spider body.
We got a little of that.
That's
going.
What it feels like over there. It's just like the land of misfit toys with a Terry Crist bobblehead that's broken. We've got mini Stanley cups all over the place.
Keith Bullock is face down. Yeah. He's face down on the floor. I mean, he looks like he's just been knocked out.
Yeah.
Like that's not good. We got to rescue
him and Duchesne. Both of them are knocked down, aren't they?
Duchesne is face down.
Yeah, Duchesne's face down. What were they doing in here last night? Fighting?
Kevin Byard's got his face against the wall, which a Titans Kevin Byard bobblehead might be worth something Sunday.
Yeah.
It's like the cartoon. Yeah. Not Toy Story. What was the other one with the gargoyles? The gargoyles.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
No, it was these toys that came to life. Willie, I remember. It may have been. No, you probably saw
it. Not Jumanji.
Caroline.
Or no. Night at the Museum?
No, it's when Jumanji. the father owned the toy store, the grandfather owned the toy store. And the toy store wasn't selling enough toys, but then they brought these like gargoyles and these commanders to the store, and they were alive.
I don't have any idea.
Sounds
what
like
that
a great
is.
Movie.
Was it a scary
like
movie?
No, it wasn't a scary movie.
I was going to say Chucky, but no.
It wasn't a scary
like
movie.
Furbies?
It was sort of like. It was like
called?
Toy Story, but not as happy. You know, it wasn't like.
Small Soldiers?
Bad. Small Soldiers, yes.
I
yes.
Know if ever
Small
Soldiers,
yes.
Got reason. That on VCR. Wow, I'm dating
VCR.
Myself.
VCR. Yeah, it did come out in the VCR era. You're right about that one.
98.
Oh, okay. See?
Feels see? Like 98.
Yeah. I hope it
great
doesn't.
Year for you and also for Tennessee fans.
yes, 98 Chris, was a good year for them.
Good year for Tennessee fans. Chris Mason will join us here in just a few minutes. A little bit of a funky schedule because Willie Donick, you have a flight to catch to Toronto. But the Predators take it 5-1 last night hosting the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I'll be honest with you. If I had a blindfold on during that game, I wasn't watching anything, and you just asked me, Caroline, one team went 0-for-4 on the power play, and the other went 2-for-3. Who was it? I'm going to have to give the edge to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But that was not the case. Preds 2-for-3 on the power play last night. The penalty kill was absolutely fantastic. Andrew Burnett last night called Tampa Bay Lightning's power play maybe one of the best in the history of the league. Willie, would you agree?
I think over time, it's right up there. Yeah, Edmonton's for sure is in there. But the next discussion would have to be Tampa is right in there with the five guys. They've said they've had the same five guys or four of the five for a long time.
So the Preds take it 5-1. And it really, after the Lightning went up 1-0, it was the Predators show. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were the dominant team. They were the tougher team. I felt like the more physical team. And it showed in the box score and the scoreboard last night.
It was impressive. The penalty kill in particular, I think, was noteworthy. And you got to give Dan Hynote and the guys, I think, a lot of credit for the game plan because nobody seems to have been able to figure out how to slow down Tampa's power play. And I wouldn't say they shut it down last night, but they did about as well as you can do. I mean, 0-for-4, but there were still some chances in there. And then when they got the chances, Juuse Saros was magnificent. That's another thing that's really exciting about where it's going is Juuse Saros each week seems to be taking the strides. And last night I thought he was at his best in that when he's at his best sometimes you see the puck going from point A to point B and you're like, oh, that's going to be a scoring chance. And then the shot comes and he's there. Like he's waiting for it. He's one step ahead. It wasn't happening as much early. But last night was a great example of how he can be the equalizer. He neutralized Tampa's best part of their game, mm-hmm. along with some good penalty killing. And then from there, Nashville did the job on the other end, really doing a good job, outworked them, outpossessed them, and converted on scoring chances.
Yeah, they are, what, 9-2 in their last 11, and they're looking to extend it when they play the Maple Leafs. What is it, tomorrow, Willie?
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow
Hockey
night,
night in
man.
Canada. Oh, Elliot Friedman goodness. And the Sportsnet crew, they'll be front and center. Remember he said there, yeah. Barry Trotz is coming here. What's he going to say? But it is a fun thing for the players because mm-hmm. a lot of them are, you know, they grew up in Canada, and this is a big – it's the Monday night football, right, or Sunday night football nowadays where you get the spotlight. Everybody's watching, and, it you know, it goes back generations. And the media, they learn about the team. I think there's a lot of people that don't know much about. The Predators have been kind of flying under the radar this year. It's not a team that was planning on doing much, or not a team that people planned on being in this position, especially when they were 5-10. I think they were like, oh, well, the Predators, they're out of it.
Right.
And now they're back in the mix a little bit here.
And when the Predators were 5-10, I don't think it was even really newsworthy that they weren't playing very well or they weren't finding ways to win games because Barry Trotz told everybody, hey, be patient with us. We don't necessarily expect to be a cup-contending team this season. And one thing that I do think is important to point out was Andrei Vasilevskiy was not in goal last night, so that makes a difference.
Yeah, caught him on a back half of back-to-back and took advantage of it.
And you could kind of tell that the Lightning were feeling it a little bit. But also, it's not like the Predators are coming off of this long, cushy break.
Yes.
This has been a grind.
Everybody's in the
of
grind.
A week or so.
It's been a grind for them, and it's going to continue to be a grind for the next, what, couple of games, a week or so here. But they've outscored, you know, their opponents 2-1, basically. If you average it up, the last 11 games, they've won 9, lost 2. But they've outscored has been like a 2-1 ratio. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you, one, what UC is doing in net. Now, he had the bad game against the Wild, I understand. He got pulled early in that game. But I think on average, he's been doing a really good job, and he's one of the reasons why, along with some other, you know, a lot of other guys, but he's one of the reasons why they sit in a position of a playoff position at this point in time in the season. Like I said, going 9-2 in the last 11, and they're looking to extend that tomorrow night.
And there was another thing that I liked last night, and I think that you can look at it as wins and losses in different ways for this team because, like I just mentioned, Barry Trotz said, hey, be patient with us. I think with so much newness, with so many young players, new system, new coach, you can pick up on little wins and losses here and there that don't necessarily show up on the scoreboard. Now, of course, you won the game last night. That's the most important thing. I remember about a month ago, a few games into the season, enough games where we could make enough of analysis, but still so few games that it was like, I understand things are going to change very early. You know, we still have plenty of time left. We were talking about concerns about the special teams, about how power play really couldn't get going, how the penalty kill really couldn't get a stop. I think one of the little wins amongst a really big win last night is how you're starting to see the penalty kill, I think, piece itself together.
That's going to be important going forward here, too, because that was the weakest part of their game, I think, early. They seemed to be snake bit, and sometimes, you know, things start all coming together. Like, you might get a bad bounce here. Mm-hmm. You might have a breakdown over there. And sometimes you have a breakdown, and the goalie makes the save or the guy misses the shot, and you get away with it, and your confidence doesn't drop at all. But it seemed like there was a stretch of time where everything was bouncing off one of the Predator guys and going in, or a breakdown, boom, it's converted for a goal. And then you see your number, and you're ranked 29th or whatever it is. And that weighs on you a little bit as a group. So I think that was a big confidence boost last night. So if they can keep moving in the right direction, and just what Hal Gill, who was a longtime penalty killer, always says, take it in segments, right? Don't worry about what you've done, but let's take the last 4 games. Let's see if you can have a good next 4 games. And it won't get any easier tomorrow because Toronto's got a great power play as well. I mean, they got some lethal shooters.
I wanted to ask you something, Willie, because Caroline sort of briefly mentioned it about you know, the sort of, you knew this was going to take some time coming into the, you know, beginning of the season. You knew it was going to, not necessarily the rebuild, we know it's not a rebuild, but it's, you knew this team was not going to be, well, you figured they were not going to be like one of the top teams in hockey. We knew they were not going to be a top three or four team in hockey. And Barry Trotz basically came out and said, listen, this is going to take some time. It's going, we got to put this thing back together. These young guys got to know how to play. We got a new coach. Why is it easy or more accepted in hockey than football? Like football, you can't, like Rand Carthon couldn't have got up on that podium the day he was hired and said, even though we knew the roster wasn't good and we knew they were going to have some difficulties, he couldn't get on the get up there and say, you know what, it's going to take some time. Just be patient with us. You know, we got to do some things, evaluate some guys. We got to get some guys in place, but it's going to take some time, but we're going to get there. Why is it easier for, I'm not going to say easy, but why is it more accepted in sort of the hockey space and it's not accepted in the football space, at least here in Nashville?
That's a great question. I think that in baseball and hockey, what you have the ability to do as a general manager mm-hmm. is say, we've got a talent pool in the minors that we're mm-hmm. developing, that we got our eye on, and they're not ready right now. Like, take the Braves, right? They had all those years in the 90s with mm-hmm. Glavin and Maddox and those guys, and that lasted into the 2000s. And then at some point there, they hit a wall. They had about 4 years before this particular group that we're seeing on the field now took flight. And so they had 4 years of bad teams. But what they were doing, they were piling up prospects. You know, they were making trades for Dansby Swanson, and they were drafting high. And they knew they had good players in the minors, but they had to just wait until it came. It doesn't always work, but it worked really well for the Braves. I think that's what a general manager in hockey can say is, okay, here's what we think we have in the minors. It's going to take a little while for us to see what we've got there, but we like where it's going. So this may not be the year, but in the coming years. In football, you don't have that, right? No. You have no minor league system at all, and I still think that's something they should look at. I don't know if they ever will, but it's like, well, we got to find the quarterback. We don't know if we've got him yet, and he may not be in the locker room right now. We may have to try to draft him. So that I think that's what makes it hard in the NFL to rebuild or to say, look, we're building over the next 2 or 3 years. You can to an extent, but you don't know what you're going to have because you have no development system.
And I think the important thing, if we want to hyper-focus it into the local teams, mm-hmm. Predators versus Titans, where the vibe locally about a Predators rebuild, retool, retrots, whatever you want to call it, versus a Titans rebuild, mm-hmm. I think it's the transparency. Because
yeah.
Barry Trotz came out and said, look, be patient with us. We want to win, but I cannot guarantee you that it's going to be pretty at all times this season. Mm-hmm. And I think fans heard that and said, okay, because we haven't been pleased with the product that we've seen the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. We've been wanting a change. And if change causes a couple of difficult games, a couple of difficult months, a couple of difficult seasons, then we're okay with that. The difference with the Titans' message is it is so under lock and key. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of transparency. The Titans don't want to say, hey, bear with us. Things might not be very good for a couple of games, mm-hmm. for a season or so. We're going to try and win as many games as possible, but we understand that we may have some deficiencies on our rosters. The difference is the expectation that's being set from the higher-ups. Joining us now, Chris Mason. C. Mace, appreciate your time. I know that you're headed
Masons
to
unite.
Toronto.
C. Mace and D. Mace.
C. Mace, D. Mace.
The
all
energy
kinds
is
of
good.
Maces. We need a B. Mace to complete our,
exactly.
our full alphabet. C. Mace, we were just talking about the game last night. 5-1, Predators take it over the Tampa Bay Lightning. I was so impressed with what I saw from that team. I understand Andre Vasilevsky wasn't in net last night, but to hold that power play to 0-4 on a penalty-killing unit that I thought had a lot of improvement to make from the beginning of the season until now. I was really impressed with the toughness and the fight I saw from this Predators team last night.
Yeah, I thought obviously you mentioned no Vasilevsky, but they had the rest of the guys in front of them. So I think that's a huge step. That was the biggest, to me, was the biggest matchup in the game. was shutting down their power play. It's not only one of the best in the league. It's eating the Predators alive. It seems almost every time they play them, their power play is, you know, the sole reason that, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning, beginning of the year, third period, Preds were hanging in there. They take some penalties, and the power play ended it for the Lightning. And they had a penalty shot, which was a penalty, and the discipline was a factor. But I think, you know, you look at the personnel that they have and the job Dan Hyno did last year, sixth in the league, I think, and this year they got off to a tough start. Didn't help that they had the schedule they did, but I think in the long run that's going to help them, playing all those top power plays, maybe getting beat up a little bit. New guys coming in, and I know Hyno tried to season with a new guy on the team, and then a guy that had been here the year prior to kind of get some familiarity and some comfortable with the power play units. But now they're starting to – they've been making impacts, positive impacts on the game, in particular last night and lately. You know, if you cut the numbers off from the first 10 games or so, maybe even a bit more, they still got scored on, and they've had some bad luck. Like, I don't know. I don't care. If you want to go back to all these games and people say, oh, luck, you create your own luck. That is true. There's an element somewhere in between of maybe you're a little bit out of position, but the fortuitous bounces for the other team, I think, you know, especially during that tough stretch, were tough. But they're so much better now, and they've got confidence. And that's one of the things I think they've had to work. Everybody knows exactly what's expected of them as a four-man group. One piece is out of place. You could be killing great, and then all of a sudden you have a breakdown for 15 seconds, and just one guy misses an assignment. It's in the back of your net. But I think now everybody is so much more cohesive, and they've got confidence. And every time they go over the boards now, they expect to win. And last night, that helped them get 2 points. There's no doubt about it.
Did the Austin Watson slap shot that hit Jeremy Lauzon last night, does that warrant a suspension?
No, because I honestly know Watson. I don't think that's what he was trying to do. I think he was frustrated all the way down on Saros. I didn't like it. I mean, there's no point to do it, but sometimes when you're in the heat of the moment, you do stupid stuff. And I think that was one of those, you know, that was one of those things that you could see him out there. He was looking for another fight, and he was being an agitator. I don't think he would ever purposely try to hit somebody like that. And Lauzon was pretty far back. I think he put his head down and just tried to shoot it all the way down the ice. That's just me.
I read in his body language, I think he felt bad about it. As soon as it happened, he was like, uh-oh.
I didn't mean to do that.
I was told by a couple of people that he did come over and say that was my bad. Sorry about that.
I would bet. Yeah, I would stake.
And
my
now you have to keep your fingers crossed that Lauzon is okay, because he was really angry going off the ice.
Because I get it. If Austin Watson didn't mean to do it, I understand that. But the results are still.
I know. That's the thing.
I agree. That's the consequences. You're responsible for that. So obviously. Something they're going to look into, and then I'll have to map it out. I don't know if he's been suspended before, but especially if Lauzon misses any time, that's just completely unfortunate.
Now, what did you see from the Predators in regards to their power play? Because they're going against not just one of the best power play teams, but also one of the best teams in the league at killing power plays. What did they do specifically that they were able to take advantage of the Lightning?
I think this season, I was just looking this up today, Ryan O'Reilly is taking the most power play faceoffs. His percentage is around 62%. So they're starting with the puck a lot. And I think this year, more than any year I've seen the Predators, maybe in the history, maybe back, you have to go back to the Hornquist days of having that net front presence. But they're all over the net. They're executing passes. They're getting penalty kills stationary. Every penalty kill is going to be super aggressive until you move the puck efficiently enough to make them stop and then protect the middle of the ice. And that takes quick, either moving your feet right away or moving the puck right away. And you go high to low, then you get the penalty killers down, collapsing around the net. And I just feel the effectiveness that the guys have had this year, they're able to do that more frequently, which leads to them to be able to set up more plays. And then once they get in the proper positions, it's one thing to get shots, but you have to, you know, if you're Roman Josi, you want to shoot that puck. when you get the opportunity. But if you have that net front presence, it's even better. And not only do they usually almost always have one layer of traffic, they've got two layers of traffic. So once everybody recognizes it's a good time to shoot and Yossi's going to be shooting that puck, they converge, they attack the net. The Parsonen goal was a perfect example of that. They had two guys at the net front, and then Parsonen gets a rebound, hits the traffic in front, he gets a rebound, no chance for the goalie. So I really, and Yossi's goal, same thing, net front traffic. It's just, it's been a common denominator that I think they were stressing at the beginning of the year that wasn't always there. They were getting the chances, they didn't have the traffic, and now they have it almost every time. And you could see the success rate. And I think that's really clicked in with the guys.
Mace, you look at Cole Smith, Colton Sissons, Yakov Trenin. They're not headliner guys, but I thought they were very important last night. Cole Smith picks up another point. Cole Smith's plus two, Sissons plus three. Trenin gets the empty net goal. We noticed him all over the ice last night. He's plus three. In a game like that, where a lot of times they're taking the tough shifts against Kucherov's line, that's a huge number in that game.
It's a huge number, and it's exactly the type of game plan. They played last night, they had to travel, got in a little bit late. As the game goes on, those types of minutes and those types of shifts that those guys played against the Lightning, it's going to wear them down. And I think in the third period, you could just see it. You know, they kept the puck in there. They're hounding pucks. And it's one thing when you have, you know, certain guys, it's just in their DNA. You know, that's just no matter what the situation is, if you're up, you know, up three, down three, if you're back-to-back, if you played four and five or whatever the case may be, they're going to work. And they had all three of those guys. And the Lightning just didn't have an answer. You know, they've got more superstar skill on that team. But up and down the lineup, you know, you put a line out like that that's going to go in there and, you know, make contact every single time. They're going to, as soon as they miss or make the Lightning moves a puck, the next guy's in there. It's just like it was just a swarm. And, you know, they're playing with a lot of confidence right now. And their effectiveness, I think, is obviously every guy on the team is going to praise a line that goes out there and plays like they do. But the confidence level, I think, right now by that line, everybody has a role on the team. Everyone's got a job. And I think right now you're seeing them take a lot of pride and have a complete understanding of what their job is. Any offense, which they have been contributing, is a bonus. But it's, you know, when three players on the line have confidence and feel like a major part of the team, I think that goes a long way.
Also, you can tell when a team is really rooting for each other. I think they're really scoring high in that category right now. And the example was when Ryan McDonagh scored that goal last night. It's against his former team, but it was a spectacular type of goal. Hal Gill almost jumped, you know, almost hit the rafters jumping up because he's already fairly close to the rafters up there.
It's pretty tall.
But he went airborne because you don't see like a backhand one-timer like that very often. And he went top shelf. That was really something. But the reaction of the players around a guy like that, you just see how much they love Ryan McDonagh.
Oh, my God. It's, you know, and he's, we always knew he was a leader. He's won championships, you know, and Brunette and everybody said that he's, you know, had the opportunity to be a little more vocal, maybe have a bigger piece of the room there now. Everybody knows him, what he's all about. And when you're starting fresh, like they are this year with a lot of new voices, you know, he gets to step up and do what he has done his entire career. And, you know, you're so right. I mean, we were talking to the Tampa people and they're just saying how much they miss Ryan McDonagh for what he brings to the team. And I think, you know, it's like you have those older guys on the team. They're kind of like your dad. You know, he's always, you're looking for advice and a dad that, you know, is kind of always there for everybody else. And they've got a real special thing. And I think we've seen, I've played on teams where you have that camaraderie where just you love everybody on the team. And, you know, it does feel like a family. I know that is cliche, but you spend so much time together. You go through the battles, you go through the, you know, the awesome times, and then you go through the mud together and you really find out what you're made of and what kind of chemistry you have. I think, you know, doing that. And I think, you know, early in this season, they've went through a lot of both, to be honest with you. It's like a fresh start and everybody's in it together. But you see these guys off the ice like we do, Willie, or on the plane or wherever it is, you know, they have that special ingredient. And, you know, I've been on teams with that special ingredient that I would say maybe aren't the most talented, but you tend to overachieve, I think, more when you have that camaraderie and that family type of a feeling, obviously way more than the other D-Mace. I know you guys know that very well, and I really feel that this team has that.
Chris Mason, appreciate you for joining us, especially on such short notice with your trip to Toronto coming up. But we appreciate you as always, and we'll chat with you next week.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right, safe travels. Willie D, you will also be departing us. We will miss you very much, but I know that you've got a great call coming up tomorrow night in Toronto.
Yes, you guys have a great weekend. I will. I'm actually coming off a really good Take It to the Bank, so I got to get my pick into Nick because I feel
it?
Like December could be my month.
This
could
be
it. It could be.
It's Donixember.
And I just want to make sure that everybody knows how much I'm thankful for the low-scoring games in the NFL last week because that was my pick. So the boring games were good for me.
And I thought that you could have double cashed in on that Thursday night football game last night.
I should have.
It was actually not as low scoring as I thought it was going to be.
And the Patriots won.
I thought it was going to be like an Iowa situation. Iowa, Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
Over under 13.
Iowa-ish.
Very,
yes.
Very Iowa.
Over under 6 points.
Brutal, brutal. Willie Donick, safe travels to Toronto. Coming up next, do the Titans have any shot? Any shot against the Dolphins. We'll discuss, and of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Coach, coming off the loss, looking ahead to the Dolphins, what's kind of the big message of the conversations you're having with your team this week?
Well, this was a great opportunity to get in here this morning and to get back, at it. I mean, you put a lot into it every week, and sometimes you put a lot into it, and you lose, and you lose a close game, and that's disappointing. But you got to pick yourself back up. You got to answer the bell, and we have to. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us, especially the Dolphins, and it's a very good football team. But we have to get ready and prepare, and a lot of different looks. So there's a lot to cover.
Yeah. It is a pretty good football team. I would say that there is there's a lot to cover, in theory. I don't think the Titans have anyone that can cover them.
Nah.
I don't know if the Titans have anyone that can cover an above-average wide receiver in the National Football League, much less anyone that can cover Tyreek freaking Hill.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for him, but this is when, coaching comes truly into play. You got to design a game plan that's going to you're not going to shut him down, but you got to make it difficult. You got to throw off their rhythm. Tua Tagovailoa is a rhythm thrower. You got to throw off his rhythm. I don't understand, in watching, when people and I get it. The guy is fast and quick or whatnot, but if you just let him run off the line of scrimmage, he's going to beat you every time. You got to throw off the timing with he and the quarterback, whether it be pushing him a little bit, getting some hands on him. They're going to have to do whatever they need to do to make sure that he doesn't. He's going to get his catches. You know that. But you don't want him to get those back-breaking catches, those, catch a 5-yard hitch and take it 65 yards, or you bust the coverage and he's streaking down the sideline. If he dominates the game, someone should be held accountable, because going into this game, one guy, everybody, they got a bunch of good players on their team, but one guy that I can't allow to beat me is Tyreek Hill. I got to do whatever I can to minimize his effect on the game. If you're not able to do that, if you let him run wild like AJ did last year, then yeah, somebody needs to be held accountable for that, because you know what you're facing coming into the game, and it can get very embarrassing if you don't take the necessary steps to slow him down. Again, I'm not asking them to stop him, because you can't, but you can slow him down and make it difficult for Tua Tagovailoa to get in a rhythm with him.
I hear you. I'm with you, because that's one thing that has been bugging me about the Titans to no end. I think the Cleveland game is the perfect example. They let Myles Garrett take that game over. And to let Myles Garrett take the game over, I think, is football malpractice. Because, Cleveland had a lot of dudes on that defensive front. But there is one dude. There is one guy that you should look at and say, If anyone else beats us, that's fine. I'll tip my cap to you. I'm not going to let your best player take the game over. They let Cleveland's best player take the game over. I fear that they will let Tyreek Hill do the same thing. Because I hear you. You got to slow him down. Try to throw him off. Force Tua into making decisions that he doesn't want to make. At least try to throw a hitch in what Tyreek Hill wants to do. I don't know if they have the horses to do that, though, D-Mace, especially with no Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to take the pass rush up front. It's going to take discipline. This Titans team has been undisciplined in the secondary. You can look at last week, the touchdown pass Mitchell threw toward the beginning of the game, where you got a safety sitting back there and the corner. And for whatever reason, the safety, he's sitting flat-footed. And the guy is running a thin post between he and the cornerback. And
Your head up,
yeah, by the time he realizes it, the receiver is behind him. And you can't allow that to happen. If you are there to help that guy, you had a 3-by-1. One guy runs basically a shallow cross. I think that's what it was. The other guy runs a sort of a medium, deep to medium post to cross the safety face. You let him go. You didn't see that other post coming behind him where he had inside leverage on the corner, and it's your responsibility to help him. You didn't help him. Your eyes were not disciplined in what you were seeing or what was going on. And you allowed, along with the corner, allowed a receiver to get over to both of y'all and score a touchdown. They can't allow that with Tyreek Hill. They have to have 4 eyes on him at all times. Damn, sometimes even 6 if they can. But they can't allow him to single-handedly. Like, he can beat them just he and Tua. They can't allow that to happen. They got to make it very difficult for Miami to move the ball down the field. If they don't, we're going to see another situation that we saw, 6 weeks ago when they put up 70 on the Denver Broncos. Whoa. And we may just see something like, I'm not saying 70 points, but I'm saying a track meet. If they don't play discipline in the back end and the defense doesn't get enough pass rush.
Titans can't win in a track meet. No. Miami has the best offense in the NFL. They're averaging 32 points a game. You're averaging 18. Mm-hmm. They're averaging almost 500 yards a game. You haven't even averaged 300. Mm-hmm. I mean, this just feels like a David and Goliath kind of matchup. This feels like an unfair SEC versus cupcake kind of matchup, mm-hmm. honestly, to me, that it could be an Alabama Mercer kind of situation where Miami can just run the score up and there's just nothing that you can do about it. But to one of your points earlier, Tyreek Hill, let's just say hypothetically, 140 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. Should Shane Bowen get fired?
Woo, boy, oh boy. Should Shane Bowen get fired?
If not now, then at the end of the season.
I think you really need to, because you got to look at the whole, not just that particular or this particular game, this game. You got to look at the whole of what's going on, starting back to last season. Where this defense, it's just started to erode. And I get it. They had some injuries on the defense side. They played well at times. We can point out the games that they held their own, but you can see it start eroding some. And then this season, the run defense just eroded away. You can't – if you allow one guy, Tyreek Hill, to single-handedly beat you, then, yes, again, somebody needs to be held accountable. There needs to be, an explanation on, what happened. Because it just seems like when Shane Bowen didn't have that sort of security in Schwartz, that this defense seems to have taken a step backwards. And I'm just looking at it based upon numbers and the eye test. This is not the same defense that it was, last year at one point or even a year before that. This is a defense that's basically, it seems like they're trying to hold on. Then you got Jeffrey Simmons injured. You got Christian Fulton maybe out because of the hamstring. You got guys that didn't practice yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I know we're still early in the week considering it's a Monday game. Well, we're in the middle of the week now. But still, you need guys fully healthy and ready to go. And if you allow them to beat you throwing the football the way they have beaten everybody, just about everybody else, then, yeah, you should be held accountable for that. Shane Bourne should be held accountable because it wouldn't just be a one-game situation.
Right.
This has happened. The one thing you held your hat on, well, you hung your hat on, was run stopping. You hadn't been that good run stopping this year. You've had your moments. You've had your moments. But as a whole, this hasn't been a run stopping team, which hurts them as a whole, because if I can't stop the run, my back end is not that good. What do you think is going to happen? Teams are going to start the points are going to increase, or the losses will continue to mount up. So they got to do a good job defensively. And if they don't, then Vrabel and Shane Bourne, if it gets out of hand, let's just say that. If they lose 28-14, okay.
What do you think is the likelihood of them losing 28-14?
You know what? I do believe this. This is one of these games where, for some reason, you had that extra day. Because I guarantee you this. They've been game planning for the Dolphins since last week. Once they got all of their game planning in
for
the Colts, they started game planning for Miami, because you know what you're facing. You know what you're about to go against. So we need all the time we can to sort of game plan and put together something that can potentially stop them. So they've been game planning them, somewhat for the last week and a half. Now they're really into it. So to me, if they go out there and say if it's 28-14 or 28-21, now, which I don't think it's going to be, but let's say 35-17.
Okay.
I am okay in a sense with that. Because
that's
to
a beatdown.
It all depends on how it happens. There could be, the offense is just not doing well and put the defense in a bad situation every time. You know what I'm saying? When we punt the ball off, we don't have our punter. So that could affect the game. Stonehouse is great at getting the ball to the other side of the field and pinning teams back. So now you don't have that weapon. So I don't want – what can possibly happen here is the Titans go three and out several different times. They're on their end of the field. You punt the ball because you don't have your – I'm going to say it. He was an all-pro punter before he got hurt. You don't have your all-pro punter. Now you don't get those punts that you usually get that are backing teams up. Mm-hmm. Now instead of Miami possibly having to drive 90 yards, they got to drive 50.
And they can 60. Easily drive 90 and if they can need to.
But I would rather – but I think the Titans could make it a little bit difficult for them to travel 90 yards. I think the Titans –
Who
this
would
is that
make
one,
it difficult?
This is one of those games. I'm not saying they're winner. This is not about wins or losses to me right now. But I think this is a game that we're going to look at and be surprised in a good way. They may not win, but we're going to be surprised. And we're going to think, why couldn't they do this like the other 10 games? Why they couldn't play like this the other 10 games? Again, I'm not saying whether they're going to win or lose, but I think for whatever reason, I think the players are going to take, they're going to take this personal. This has nothing, I don't think it has anything with the coaching staff. These guys are going to walk in and don't want to be embarrassed. So they're going to go out and they're going to get, exactly. They're going to go out because that's what everybody's talking about. The beatdown. They're looking past the Titans. Everybody's looking past the Titans with Miami. They're just expecting a beatdown. The players, it may not be that. We're going to go out and we're going to play the type of football from a defensive standpoint that we're used to playing. I think they're for at least one game, they're going to get back to that, playing that way.
I wish I had your optimism, Dumaise. And weird things happen in the National Football League.
It
weird
does.
Things happen where you could have. Right now, the Dolphins, I believe they're still a 13-point favorite. Mm-hmm. You have one team that's a 13-point favorite and lose at home on Monday Night Football. This mm-hmm. league is weird. They do weird things. I just don't think, especially without Jeffrey Simmons, that this defense has enough talent and has enough horses to keep up with 11 horses that the Dolphins have offensively. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be ugly. I don't want to feel that way. And I hope I'm proven wrong. And I think you are right. I don't think they want to be embarrassed. But I also think to a certain extent, toughness and motivation can only take you so far. Mm-hmm. Where if you just don't have the talent, you don't have the talent. But I want to continue this conversation coming up next, because Vegas tells us the Titans don't have much of a shot in this one. And I think that if you've watched any Titans football and any Dolphins football, which I feel like every person in this town has, you understand that this is a long shot opportunity for the Titans, that they just simply are outmatched. So if it is ugly, if it is 13, 14 double-digit point losses like Vegas says it's going to be, does that make the fan base more upset with Mike Vrabel? Is the fan base where they're at? Are they just, you know, look, you either believe in him and you don't, or you don't, and there's really nothing that's going to change that? We'll get into that coming up next, and of course into your phone, 615-737-1025. Also appreciate Chris Mason for joining us in the last segment. C-Mace, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. 1025-1063 The Game.
The X Plays, this team is as difficult as anyone trying to defend us.
Well, a lot of speed. You know, they've got a good scheme and a lot of speed. And, you know, the quarterback, Tua, does a fantastic job of being able to distribute the football. And sometimes those X plays are handoffs. Sometimes they're short passes. It's not, you know, every single one. I mean, yeah, if you're pressed up on Tyreek, you could guarantee that it's going downtown. But it's not just throw it over your head every time. It's, you know, catch and run. It's good ball placement by the quarterback. And then guys, you know, breaking tackles, and, you know, they lead the league in, you know, missed tackles for. So those things will be critical once they have the ball in their hand.
That was Mike Vrabel on Tyreek Hill, and that has to be the game plan. Just don't let him take the game over. You might put three guys on him and it's still not enough. I can at least appreciate the effort, but the last thing that I want to see is Elijah Molden one-on-one with Tyreek Hill.
Hell no, that better not happen.
There's zero excuse for that. Zero excuse. Mm-mm. I do wonder, D-Maze, and I want to get into some of your thoughts, phone lines driven by WilsonCunningham.com. If the Titans get blown out, like I think that they will, I would bet the score is probably 35-7, 35-10, something along those lines. Bad, yeah, ugly.
It may be brutal.
Does that change anyone's perception on Mike Vrabel? Like, do the people that are angry with Mike Vrabel get angrier? Do the people that believe in Mike Vrabel all of a sudden don't believe? Because, honestly, Divas, the way that I feel about it is, if you don't believe in Mike Vrabel, you don't believe in Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. If you do, then you do. Because if you haven't stopped believing in Mike Vrabel after how bad this team has looked all season long, what's one more game going to hurt?
It's not. I mean, but I think it all depends on how the game goes. I don't think now when you're talking, you know, the people that are making decisions, will they change? I don't think so. I think even they know going into this game, listen, this is going to be a tough one, you know. So I don't think as far as the Tennessee circle in that build or anything, I don't think they will. But I think this is the game, and we talked about this early in the week, and we talked about this last week in regards to Vrabel and, you know, people loving him and everything else, and, you know, the speculations whether Amy, you know, was going to fire him, but she came back, and, you know, I love my coach. He's here. Don't worry about it. But once the national narrative changes, that's when we need to really look into this. Like, okay. Yeah, this one, he might be gone.
I don't think the national narrative is going to change.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So if it's I guarantee you this, if it's 17-31, people are praising the Titans. They're praising Vrabel. Oh, and say Tyreek doesn't go off. They're praising Vrabel. That adds on to the allure of Vrabel. That adds on
That's
to
still
the
a two touchdown
I know,
loss.
You gotta go with me on this.
Where are the standards, people?
It's like this folk tale that it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger every time you tell a story. Well, if he holds them, If he keeps it close, then the story of Vrabel gets bigger. He becomes this, oh, just awesome coach. Now he's one of the greatest coaches. Now if he gets blown out, 45-7, 51-14, then
70-20.
Then people are like, from a national standpoint, like, oh, okay. Maybe the shine has worn off of Vrabel. Maybe he's not the coach we thought he was. Maybe this team is not as good, you know, or they're even worse than what we thought. Because from a national standpoint, they still revere Vrabel. Vrabel is still the man. They love him. Vrabel. But you get blown out, they're going to slowly stop loving him. And then that's when it starts to affect the Tennessee, the circle of the Titans, when the national narrative changes on Vrabel. Because right now the national narrative is you can't let him go because somebody's going to scoop him up right away and he's going to lead them to a Super Bowl.
Like, who cares if somebody scoops him
but
up?
But I understand that. And I've said that for the longest. Like, you can't keep a coach because you're afraid of somebody else hiring him the next day. They hired Frank Wright after Indianapolis fired him. Carolina hired him, and he will get another job after Carolina just fired him. Yep. So you can't be afraid of that. But if they get ran out of the building in Miami, that national narrative is going to start to change a little bit, which then is going to put heat back here in Nashville.
You've won 4 of your last 19 games. Mm-hmm. I think I did that math right.
They still love him outside of Tennessee. They still love him here, some people, but they love him outside of Tennessee.
I agree with you. But I don't know how one game changes that. Because remember, the Titans got blown out. Mm-hmm. The doors blown off at Buffalo last year.
But that was different. That was different. Everybody was injured. And it was sort of like a...
Was everybody injured?
No, that was early. But it's different.
Tannehill got benched in that game, actually.
It was different because what was their record? I think they were like, they still had a winning record.
I think they were.
They still had a winning record.
Yeah. So people, and then.
That was what, like week 3? They were 1-1?
Was it week 3?
It was early in the season.
It might have been 4 or 5. It was somewhere in between, let's say 3 and 5, in between weeks 3 and 5. But they, I'm sure if it was a little bit later, like week 5, they had a winning record. And people were looking at, oh, it's just a one game thing. Buffalo's a great team. Buffalo, people were saying they were on their way to the Super Bowl. They were scoring points. You couldn't stop Josh Allen. You couldn't stop Diggs. You couldn't stop the offense. They were ready to go. So people looked at that a little bit different. Okay? This one, if you get blown out this late in the season, I think once they start talking about it nationally because it's Monday Night Football and you're going to be the only thing they're talking about, there's not 8 other games during that day and you just kind of get lost in the shuffle. No, you are on prime time. Mm-hmm. They're going to watch you get your tail whooped if indeed that happens. And then everybody the next day is going to talk about it. I'm telling you, it's going to be on every ticker, First Take, Get Up, everything. And then that changes the perception here in Nashville because the national narrative has been changed.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think you're going to get blown out. I really do. I hope not, but I think you do. I don't think the national narrative is going to be any anti-Vrabel anything. I think it's going to be all praise for Mike McDaniels and the Miami Dolphins, and no one's going to be talking about you. Hmm. And I think what's even worse than the national media talking negatively about your team is the national media not talking about you at all. Yeah, and that's right, a trickle-down effect into this city. Because we said that a few weeks ago when things were getting bad. Things were bad. The only thing worse than an angry fan base is a fan base that does not care. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think that if the Titans get to a point where they're 4-9, 4-10, I don't think you're going to see fans holding up Fire Mike Vrabel signs at Nissan Stadium. I don't think you're going to see fans put bags over their heads. I think you're going to see fans not go at all. And that's way worse. That is way worse, in my opinion. We'll continue this conversation. We'll get back into your phones. We'll have Ask D. Mace in 30 minutes. But coming up next, repeat offenders is what Mike Vrabel labeled a handful of Titans last season. Why are they not repeat offenders elsewhere? We'll get into that. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.